Well, ill is the pandemic, and ill is why everything closed, and ill is why slowly but surely the NFL seems to be opening up. Let's talk to Albert Breer from SI.com and the Monday Morning Quarterback as he joins us on the Truist Newsmaker line. Albert, thanks for coming on.
I'm sorry you had to hear that whole idea of what it's like to smoke a cigar versus smoke weed. I apologize.
I don't know how you guys got there, but that's definitely true. Like, cigar, cigarette, dip, chew, whatever it is. Like, the first time you do any of that stuff, there's definitely a buzz. And I think that, like, contributes to why, like, some people throw up the first time, right?
Yeah, they do. I've seen it.
They get the buzz. They get a little dizzy. They go for another hit. Boom. You know what I mean? Like, I think we've all been there.
Yeah. Well, we've all been there now trying to figure out what's going to be happening across sports, college and pro. We called it the soft opening for the NFL prior to you coming on with us. What do you make out of slowly but surely business coming back in the National Football League?
Well, I think there are two things you have to take into account here. Number one, what they didn't want was they didn't want to go back in July and have just everybody flooding these buildings all at once. They've got a bunch of protocols that they're trying to kind of work out and work through. They have the benefits, of course, of watching all the other leagues, what they do right, what they do wrong. And I think the idea of doing this is really to just sort of test what works and what doesn't work and what they can expect when they have to have more people in the building, you know, come the end of July. You know, the other piece of this, I think, is the competitive piece of it. And that's why they're not allowing players in. That's why they're not allowing coaches in. And I think this is what most of the football people are concerned with. I don't know that any team really cares if another team is, you know, bringing ticket salespeople into the building, right? Like most of those people can do their work remotely anyway. There's nothing competitive about that because those teams are all, you know, working in their local markets. And where things get competitive again is when you start to bring coaches and players back into the building. And that's where the whole premise, you know, if one facility can't open, then no facility.
But here's the question. I don't believe that if it comes down to only three facilities not being open, they're not going to tell those three teams, go find a place, please. We're not going to have 29 sit around while you...
Yeah, they'll eventually get – no. You're 100% right. So they'll eventually have to get to that point. The point I'm making is they're not there yet. They don't have to do anything right now, you know. And we saw in 2011 – I mean, does anybody have, like, memories of, like, really bad football being played in 11? Like, we were all worried about it back then, but you guys remember that. The lockout wiped the entire offseason out. And, I don't remember it having, like, a huge effect on the season. Maybe it had some soft tissue injuries during training camp. But other than that, like, there wasn't, like, a huge effect. So, you know, the NFL can afford to be patient here. And there will come a time. Like, we get to the end of July. Now we're talking about something else. But sitting here in May and June, I mean, there's no need to create a competitive inequity where you don't need to.
I know that you're keeping your eye on the NFL part of this because that's the job. But I'm assuming you've heard about an alleged 80 or 67-page report, health safety report that went out to baseball players. If baseball needs 67 to 80 pages, what in the holy hell is football going to need, a sport that you actually do bang in? I'm really asking, are you waiting for a day when we actually get something semi-official or official from the ownership group saying this is what we need to have all of you players understand, like, and it becomes a book?
I'm sure that you know, Sills, the chief medical officer for the league, and the people around it, I'm sure they're all working on that. Okay. You know, the thing, like, again, like, I think they're hesitant to do anything definitive right now. While they plan their contingencies, I don't think they want to do anything definitive right now because we haven't seen what's going to happen. What European soccer is going to look like in 3 or 4 weeks. We haven't seen what baseball looks like opening up from zero, which is where the NFL is going to be going from. We haven't seen what basketball and hockey look like trying to restart their seasons and finish them off. And so, you know, are there plans there? Yeah. The minute they send those plans out to the players, you know, they're becoming public. You know what I mean? Like, it's only a matter of time until they get to the public. And I think right now they're very sensitive to the idea that if they put something out there and things change in 3 or 4 weeks, they're going to look really dumb. You know what I mean? Like, so I think they're taking their time as much as they can. They're using the flexibility that they have over the next few weeks. And, guys, I'll tell you this. There are even some teams in the more affected areas that are saying to themselves, why don't we just push the season back a month? why don't we just start October 1st? Because we have the flexibility to move the Super Bowl back. If we do that, then we'll get even more time to study what the other leagues are doing and what's happening in the other sports. And so, you know, I think that, you know, while they work on all the contingencies, they've worked really hard to try to keep some of that stuff under wraps because, you know, again, they do have that luxury of getting to see what happens with the plans that the other leagues have laid out.
Albert Breer with us from SI.com and the Monday Morning Quarterback. And it's funny you bring up 2011 and we fast forward to now. How many practices are actually in pads anyway? So how much work can you really get done on the field when it comes to blocking, working as a unit on the offensive line, and obviously tackling anyway?
You hear varying – I think you have varying accounts from different people on, like, what the real effect is of all the spring work. I think most people would tell you that we're – you're really going to feel the loss of that is in offensive timing. But I don't even know that even that, like, becomes apparent to the fan. Teams just have to adjust the way they teach, and they have to adjust the way they execute. And, I mean, like, look, like, you know, college football, I think, is a pretty good product, and that's played under pretty severe time restraints compared to what the NFL is. You know, so they'll find a way to make that part of it work. I do think, what will come into play is teams that have incumbent head coaches, teams that have incumbent quarterbacks or veteran quarterbacks will probably be in an advantage. And we did see that in 2011. You know, the two teams that were in the Super Bowl that year were the Patriots, and Belichick was in his 12th year, and the Giants, and Coughlin was in his 8th year. And they both had veteran quarterbacks in Eli Manning and Tom Brady who've been around for a long time. So I do think there will be an advantage for teams that have some continuity in their building and, you know, aren't just starting all over. That said, you guys will also remember from that year, the San Francisco 49ers with the first-year head coach Jim Harbaugh made it all the way to the NFC title game. So it's not impossible for teams with a new coach to do it either.
All right, let's run through a few things very quickly if we can. Is Cam Newton going to be signed sooner instead of later, and do you have any idea where it's going to be?
I think right now, my guess is he was still training camp, and you know, maybe this becomes a little bit like Jay Cutler before Jay Cutler's last year, where there wasn't a great amount of opportunity for Cutler, before that season, in that off season. And if you guys remember, like, you know, he signed with Fox, and then the Dolphins have an injury. I think it's going to maybe be something like that, where, you know, they have like Cam waits until the summer, and then either a team like, you know, say a Jacksonville or a Denver or a New England decides that it doesn't have the quarterback situation it thought it did, or there's an injury somewhere. So that would seem to be the most likely scenario.
Dak Prescott signs a longer-term deal, or he plays on a franchise, or he's out of Dallas sooner instead of later.
I think he signs a long-term deal. The Cowboys have a long history getting these things done. They're going to have to bend, though, and I think the answer is going to be probably doing a shorter-term deal with him than he's comfortable with. They've done these big, long deals with guys like Zeke Elliott and DeMarcus Lawrence and Jalen Smith. I think going to Dak and saying, let's do a 3 or 4 year deal. Things are uncertain right now. If we do that, then you can come back to the table when the new television deals are in effect, when the gambling monies come in, and you can really cash in then. I think that would probably be the answer. But the Cowboys' history is to get long-term deals done. I think they get this one.
Is Mahomes' new deal going to include a $40 million year in his deal at some point?
Yes. I think he'll go well over 40 million. Not well over, but I think it'll be 40 million or above. And I think that's part of the reason why guys like Dak and Dallas and Deshaun Watson and Houston, if you're those teams, I think you're hustling to try to get your deals done before Patrick Mahomes' deal gets done in Kansas City, because clearly that'll be a bank break. It'd be a bank breaker. I would say this, though, too, because of the uncertainty, the way the salary cap's going to – what the salary cap's going to look like over the next few years because of the revenue shortfalls this year. I do think doing long-term deals is going to be a little more complicated over the next few months than it normally would be.
What do you think Todd Gurley has left in the tank?
I think Todd Gurley can be a complimentary piece. If you're expecting him to be what he was, in 2017 or early 2018, when he was really the centerpiece of Sean McVay's revival of the Rams franchise, he's not going to be that again, I don't think. But if you have him paired up with another back and you're managing his workload, I'd say you can get, there's still some good football there left. And I think if you ask people in the Rams organization, and they were honest about it, as they have been privately with me, like I think that they really didn't know week to week what they were going to get. They didn't know how the knee was going to be week to week. And so for them, a lot of times it was sort of a feel thing. They'd get in the game and see how he looked, and they would sort of be able to get a feel for where he was that week. And so I think that's sort of going to be the deal. The Falcons are going to be working through this year.
So I'm assuming then it must be arthritis because it's a non-surgical, and nobody believes.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, but nobody believes that time can heal. Like, it's really amazing. He's 25. He's not 35. I keep hearing all these things, and I'm not telling you anybody's right or anybody's wrong, but this is the most amazing world-class athlete at 25, where most people are betting on the idea that without a surgery, he will still never be the same.
It's an arthritic condition, and it was, I mean, by the way, that arthritic condition existed like when he was coming out of college. Like there were teams that took him off the board because of that in 2015 when he was coming out. And so that's existed really going back to when he initially got hurt at the University of Georgia, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with the story there. You know, there are guys that come into the league with these sorts of injuries. Miles Jack, the linebacker in Jacksonville, is another one. And generally the question with those guys is, are you a one contract player? And if you look at Todd Gurley, if the criticism of him coming in from NFL teams was this guy could be a one contract player, he's 5 years in right now. He's not the same player. So you could say that, you know, this situation, unfortunately for him, I don't think it's going to get a whole lot better. It's going to be a question of how much longer he can hang on.
All right, Albert, listen, we thank you for the time. Hopefully we can talk again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Albert.
You do the same. Albert Breer from SI.com, the Monday Morning Quarterback, is his column, obviously, each and every Monday.
It is amazing.
Joining us on the Truist Newsmaker line.
Have we ever asked more questions, the same question of more people than asking about a 25-year-old's health?
And how many different answers?
Without a surgery.
Have we received as well? He's got no burst. He can be a complimentary piece.
The one
he's going to be fine.
The one thing that nobody has said, oh, wait till you see him.
No, that hasn't happened.
They've erred very much to the other side of that.
That's why he signed a one-year deal. I mean, we don't know what we're getting. He still hasn't taken a physical.
It's a non-surgical. Like, that's what's crazy to me. It's a 25-year-old, I'm assuming, still working out enough to call himself a world-class athlete. And everybody seems to say at 25, that guy's best days are so far behind him.